Speak on it.
Music hitting your heart, cause I know you got a soul. Listen if you're missing, y'all. Swinging while I'm singing. Giving what you're getting. Knowing what I'm knowing. While the black band's sweating. In the rhythm I'm rolling. Gotta give us what we want. Gotta give us what we need. Our freedom of speech is freedom of death. We got to fight the powers that be. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power! Fight the power! Fight the power! Fight the power! We got to fight the power that beats! Algorithms designed to bounce with calcium that the rhyme. Designed to fill your mind now that you realize the prize arrives. We got to pump the stuff to make it tough. From the heart it's a start, a work of art to revolutionize. Make a change, something strange. People, we all the same. No, we're not the same, cause we don't know the game. What we need is awareness. We can't get careless. You say, what is this? All the loving. Let's get down to business. Mental self-defense or fitness. No rest to show.
You got to know what you know.
To make everybody see. In order to fight the powers that be. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power.
Fight the powers that be.
Soul Residency. This is Speak On It, and we always try to bring up contemporary issues that are affecting young people and, you know, mostly people of color, Black people today. I'm so happy that we were able to get this guest artist to feature on the show. If you tuned in last week, you know that we had a friend of a friend, a Black police officer on the show. It was an intense conversation. But to follow on that conversation, give another perspective to what's going on in society right now, I want to introduce our guest for today, L. Jones. L. Jones is a poet, professor, community activist, journalist, prison abolitionist from Halifax, Nova Scotia. She was the fifth Poet Laureate of Halifax and the 15th Nancy's Chair in Women's Studies at Mount St. Vincent University. She is a co-founder of the Black Power Hour, a radio show collective with prisoners on CKDU 88.1 FM. Elle was a 2016 recipient of the Burnley Rocky Jones Human Rights Award from the Nova Scotia Human Rights Commission. Her book of poetry and essays about state violence, Canada Is So Polite, will be released in the winter from Gaspereau Press. Last week, she penned a opinion article for the Washington Post titled, Black Canadians Are Suffocating Under a Racist Policing System, too. Can we get some online claps, cheers for the one and only L. Jones? And if I can't say it, I gotta say it right now. L. Jones is the premier activist in Canada. It doesn't matter what's going on. If we're talking prison industrial complex, if we're talking black rights issues, if we're talking human rights issues, Elle is on the front line. So we're very pleased and lucky to have her today. If you have questions for the illustrious Elle, please put them in the event chat and we will get this started. Elle, what's your life like right now? I can imagine it to be only busy.
It is really busy. But by the way, Ian, if you're an OG, what does that make me?
OG.
The OGG. I also really want to thank, is it AK? Is that how I'm
AK,
saying?
AK, yeah.
Yes, thank you for that introduction and for your energy, man. It's really nice to see particularly this young Black energy at this time. So thank you so much to be in this space. I mean, we're just organizing right now. I can't even get off my phone. I'm like texting as you're introducing me, because we're really trying to take this moment and try and build this world that we want. And that means a lot of education work. We can't just be showing up at these protests. We actually need to be out here teaching people what abolition is. So we're doing like public screenings of like Black films. We're doing walks of our colonial monuments. We're doing teach-ins. So we're just really trying to bring the people along so that it's not people being lectured to, but a whole mass of people that can understand these issues and teach each other. So
right,
we're busy in this moment, but it's good.
We give thanks. Now, one of the questions that we have been sort of debating over the past few weeks on the program is the power of the protest. You know, we're kind of split on that issue. Last 2 weeks, we saw a really big movement happening in regards to protest. Now, protests have happened, you know, since time immemorial. Remember the ones for Mike Brown, for Trayvon Martin here in Toronto, in Halifax. There's been protests and protests. In your opinion, is this protest movement different? And protesting in general, is it effective?
I don't know if it's different. I mean, in January, we saw Shut Down Canada, which was one of the biggest Indigenous uprisings in Canadian history that we saw, which is kind of a object lesson to think about because that was such a big deal in January. And I don't know if many people even remember it because COVID came in and it seems so long ago.
Right.
So we can think about how even in these moments that in time is so intense, even months later, people don't even know that they happened. So these protests that are happening now, yeah, there's a particular kind of attention on them, but we also know that we've seen, I mean, we had a whole Black Lives Matter movement already, you know, and there was a lot of intense attention on that. 91 with Rodney King, and there was all kinds of events, the 1992 Yonge Street Uprising in Toronto, right? Detroit, Watts, LA, you know, so right. You can go on and on and on. So this is really a 500-year struggle. So I don't know that it's different. I think what happens is we rise up, we get put down in particular ways, whether through the military repression we're seeing in the streets in the United States, or what's happening right now in Canada is through these much more neoliberal mechanisms. So the police kneeling with us, Trudeau kneeling, you know, people putting forth all these like liberal policy things like body cameras. And that sort of fritters away a lot of the movement. And those are kind of the dangers. And this is what will happen. It always happens. We protest, we mobilize, and then it's very easy to kind of pick us off, to wear out our energy and to water down our demands, which is what Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture, taught us about the difference between mobilizing and organizing. Mm-hmm. Mobilizing has its place. It gets us to the streets. It puts pressure on people. It brings people into movements. You know, you're seeing a lot of young people that are organizing their first events and coming in and speaking for the first time. And that's really important. But we also have to organize, which is our long term. What are our demands? What is our vision? Are we educated? Are we moving together? Have we worked in our communities to talk about how we solve conflict and hold each other accountable? You know, what are we doing on the daily? And that work is the really, really, really hard work. And we have to be committed to that. So in your question about protest, protest has its place, but it's not the be all and end all. And the danger for young people is that you come out to these protests and it's like, yeah, I'm at this protest, but we don't teach you more about what goes before the protest and what comes after.
What do you think comes after? What's after this? What is the potential and what is the reality based on history?
Yeah, so I mean, the potential in this moment is that I haven't seen necessarily a mass of people talking about things like defunding the police and abolishing the police and having these very serious mainstream conversations where you're like turning on CBC. My mom right now, y'all, my mom is the most radical thinker in Black Canada. It's wild. She's all into defunding the police. And my mom's like an immigrant, you know, Black mother, you know, she's not radical at all. But she goes, and then she's like, taking the defunding principle. So she's like, I think we should defund the church. And I'm like, yo, like what Black person is taking this direction? Like defund the church if it's not she's like, if it's not serving the people, they're not allowing seniors back, we should defund the church. I'm like, oh my God, mom. And then she was like, you're always on CBC. I educated you, we should defund CBC. My mom is a woman in Black Canada taking this nowhere else. But you know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm saying. Someone like my mom, who's like a CBC listener, is listening and talking about abolishing the police. But it's also dangerous. And, you know, saying that, oh yeah, we want body cameras, we want cultural competency training, we want this and that. And I'm like, we actually don't want that. And like, you're actually undermining us. And a lot of opportunists who come in and see an opportunity for them to get a grant or a job or a position. And unfortunately, in some of our long-term organizing and like young people, I hate to tell you this, but you will put in your energy. Like, this is a youth-led movement, right? Like, so many of the people that are putting their bodies and lives on the street are young Black people, the ones getting arrested, the ones getting shot at with bullets. It always has been. Young Black people are the front lines. And then at the end of that, look at what happened in Ferguson. A lot of those people are dead.
Right.
People who led the Ferguson uprising literally died. And they're like, you know, we're sitting in cells and, you know, the people who founded BLM are sitting at the table with the president. Like, what's wrong with that picture when it's off our bodies? So that's the real danger. And the way we solve that isn't despair. It's by knowing that we have to counter that by our own revolutionary love and education and coming together just like this, you know? Because we know when we do that, we have victories, but it's not an easy victory. It's not as simple as, you know, coming out to protest and then using that to leverage your own life. You have to really care about other Black lives and be willing to sacrifice short-term gain for all of us. So
right.
We can do it, and young people can do it. We all have that power.
Shad, I know, you know, you and I were talking a little bit about the defunding questions. Did you want to articulate a bit of your sort of concerns? I think you're on mute, brother, or maybe not. Let's see.
Yeah, I was on mute. My bad. I completely forgot. But yeah, so actually, because like defunding the police has become, is such a big topic right now, I was just wondering first, Are you in support of defunding the police?
Yes.
Yes.
But I think we have to be clear what we mean when we say that.
How so?
Well, some people are saying defund the police, and when they're pressed, they're like, oh, we don't really mean defund the police. I'm like, no, we mean defunding the police. We mean defunding the police to abolish the police, take away their money. And some people think it's just shifting around some of the budget, and it's not. It really is about taking the money from police and giving it directly to community. And the thing is, I know you asked me the question. Sorry, keep going. I won't talk. You asked me the next
question. No. Just because, like, when saying defunding the police, I've met a lot of people that say that means, like, get rid of police completely. And personally, I feel like, yes, defunding the police is important, but I feel like you need to keep police funded just because that's a way to keep order. And again, because they have so much funding, and I feel like they have a lot of funding in high-risk situations. I feel like they should have less training in high-risk situations, more putting that funding towards maybe a board that oversees the police that isn't a part of it. So it's a completely different, it's cut off from the police. There's nobody that is, maybe there's like one person who is like a middleman between them, but other than that, that board makes decisions based on the police's actions, and they are the one who polices the police.
Abolishing the police, what is left in the void? Al, you can.
So, Fed, I'm really, really glad you asked this, because a lot of people are sort of pretending they've thought these things through and then haven't. So I think that's a really important question, which is, well, then what? If we think of, say, Andrew Loku, if you remember Andrew Loku, he's in the hallway with a hammer and he's headed towards his neighbor's apartment, and the police come and shoot him within 21 seconds. And his neighbor's like, but he always came to me and I could calm him down. So what would it look like if, instead of calling this outside force that comes with vests and guns, we were able to call people in our own building and train those people in our neighborhoods and buildings? And what if you're actually saying, you know, the elders in our community are here to help de-escalate, and we don't actually have to reach the crisis point, because we actually have interventions before that where people in the neighborhood are like, you know, brother, you don't seem like you're in a good place. And we had that therapy. So we shouldn't be reaching the point, first of all, where the mental health call has to be made, because there's nothing else and people have gone without any treatment, and then they're in crisis and then the police come in. So the first thing we could think about is, what would it actually look like if, instead of putting that money to the police, we put it to each other in our community, and we're like, who wants to be a justice worker? Who knows how to nurture people? Who can go to people's homes? Who can calm people down and do that in a way? The second thing we can think about is, there are models like, say, the Bear Clan in Winnipeg that polices the streets, right? So just because we don't have police doesn't mean that there's no order, right? It doesn't mean that we can't learn how to manage each other, as we've done before there were police, because police are a relatively modern invention. So what did people do before the police, right? So we can really think about that. But I think you're raising really important questions about, because I don't believe we can do this tomorrow, not because we don't have the capacity, but because if you look at elections, people don't vote, and people don't vote. I'm not like a pro-voting person. The reason people don't vote is because we don't have a democratic voice. So what if you vote, right? They can still send us off to war tomorrow and we don't get a say. So don't we need to practice building direct democratic models in our community and neighborhoods, and talking about having a say on what things look like? And if we do that, along with that, we could be building, what does justice look like in our communities? What do we want to do if somebody's beating their wife in their home, or somebody's raping somebody? What would that look like for us to intervene? What do we need? We don't need to call in, usually, you know, some white people from a station in a neighborhood that isn't even your own neighborhood. We could do that work ourselves. So I think it's really important to sort of, I guess, detach ourselves from the myth we've been told that because police exist, they have to exist. And if they didn't exist, there'd be nothing else to exist, because we know that we do this justice work all the time. How many times have you, in a friend group, there's a conflict and you work it out, right? You don't call the police. But we struggle with that, because the other side of that is, how many times in progressive groups have we had a predator around and we can't even get it together to get the rapist out of our poetry community, right? So yeah, if we're not willing to do that work and get that person out in our groups, when we're not even talking about police, we're just like, hey, why don't we just like not invite this person to harass women? So we have to practice that. We have to say, we have to be willing to actually not allow people to victimize in our communities. And we have to be willing to stand up and set boundaries and keep each other safe and hold people accountable and not allow people to do harm. And if we practice that, then we can talk about what would that look like in other communities. And then we can start to see what a world without police might look like. And that it wouldn't look like, you know, just people running around lawless. It would look like us actually being able to manage that more because we'd be on the ground in our own communities every day knowing what's happened, right? So I think that's really important. And I know I'm talking long. The last thing I'll say is I think it's really important to think that like during COVID, we've actually done a lot of these things. So in my province, we let out 50% of people from jail because it was a public health crisis. And they're like, yo, we don't want to get the rest of the community sick. Like, let's get people out. So this thing we were told that we couldn't do, like we need jail. We need people to be in jail. Actually, like now half the people aren't in jail and they're like living in hotels because it turned out we can put homeless people in hotels and house them. And it's working. And we put people in community and we don't need to spend $6,000 a month to put them in jail. We can do it much cheaper. So we actually can do these things. They're not just a fantasy. They're things we're actually doing. And then we're being told you can't do that. You know, and I think it's a real disservice to like young people who aren't being taught that you can actually police your own community. You know, you have that power and you don't need somebody else and being told that your community is too violent for you to engage with, you know? So I really want us to also start thinking through in our own lives, like what might that look like every day to do that work so that, you know, because yeah, you're right. Like, yeah, I'm not saying tomorrow, like we just get rid of the police and then we're all sitting around like, what do I do, right? We have to practice and we have to learn and we have to work together and build our neighborhoods together and go live in our neighborhoods. So like, if we're not living in our own, and I'm guilty, I don't live in a black neighborhood. So, you know, like maybe I need to go back and live in a neighborhood with my people too and put my knowledge in there, right? So these are really important conversations that we have to have. And that was a really long answer. And thank you for that question.
No, we love it. We love it. And we got time. If there's any questions in the chat from anyone who's listening, please fill them all right in. We are joined by the one and only AK and Amani. This is Speak On It, brought to you by the Black Poet Residency. You are listening live on The Hawk 101.5 FM. One of the things that I've been seeing recently is, I don't know how to call it except the commodification of Black Lives Matter or the co-opting of this movement. People are getting Instagram followers. People are, you know, you see the influencers fake boarding up walls, fake, you know, black fists. The fashion is out there. People are going to protest for a look as opposed for a message. There's a lot of things happening where you see businesses, you know, putting out these sort of blanket statements. You see prime ministers kneeling, cops kneeling. You know, for the young people in this group, you know, what effect does the social media impact of this movement have? Like, what does it look like to you? What does it look like on TikTok, on Instagram? You know, what's the flavor and how does it affect you?
Okay, I can go. I'll take that one first.
Amani, if you want to jump close to your mic as possible, that'd be great.
Better?
Yes, much better. Thank you.
All right. So I scroll through Instagram a lot and I see down my feed, oh, Black Lives Matter, swipe, follow me, Black Lives Matter. Like, okay, so I'm going to not follow you anymore because, you know, obviously you're using this as a trend. And to be honest, it's like difficult to spot who is actually there to actually support and those who are there to like commodify over it. That's why I don't, at this time, I don't really trust companies because it's something that they have to do so they don't lose customers.
Right.
So right now, I'm just like social media. Other than for my information, I don't really go on there because I find it all to be just fake. It's a commodity and I don't really like, I just wanna see how it's gonna be next year. Because I remember like 2016, there were several protests. And like, I'm just like, oh yeah, I'm going to be a part of this. Yes. But then 3-4 months later, school starts. the buzz disappears.
Right.
Everything always, like, everyone has their time in the moment, and then it's gone. Like, for example, like, what's going on in Sudan or the Uyghurs? We forgot all about that after coronavirus. So this is just a trend that happens, and what can we do to stop it? Because that's how social media works, right?
Yeah. AK?
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with Imani too. And I also, as a music content creator, it's the thing with social media is that intrinsically it's performative. So everything that exists on social media is in some way, shape or form performative. And that's where the dilemma is of, like, is it real if it's performative? Like, is this genuine? The conclusion I've come to, and, like, I don't know, I'm a little older than Imani and Sean, but, like, just barely. But I don't know if it's different for the people, like barely. But I don't know if it's different for, like their age group. But I'm at a point now where I'm starting to realize that all facets of activism are important, in the sense of everybody kind of has to chip in wherever they're able to chip in, right? So some people don't have a lot of money to donate. Some people, you know, don't have access to internet all the time, so maybe they can't post on socials, or some people maybe just don't know how to use social media like that, and they don't post on their socials, right? But I feel like the key for activism is for it to be honest to you, and for you to feel as though you genuinely care about this thing that you're being an activist for, right? So people are posting on their IG story if they genuinely feel like, you know, I have to get this message out, people have to hear this, like, I want this to reach the people that follow me, and then, like, that's okay too, right? But also, you get the social media influencers posting going to the Black Lives Matter rallies and just, you know, parking on the side and then hopping in, taking a picture, hopping back in the car and driving back to the place, right? So it's like, we'll never fully be able to tell because we're not everywhere at every time, but I feel like, you know, it's important to, you know, at least be a little optimistic about, like, there are people who really, really want to get this.
I wonder if there's a danger in, you know, I think for Black people are born with this idea that Black Lives Matter, right? It's not necessarily a hashtag. It's an intrinsic idea that we struggle with and we interrogate and that we try to remind ourselves of constantly. So, you know, if a Black person's posting whatever the malaise of the movement is of the day, halas, whatever, right? For non-Black people, you know, what was your activism like the week before, right? And is there a danger in Disney or Nike or Adidas being able to say, okay, this is our statement, we're blacking out on Tuesday, we're not going to be putting out any of our Black artists on Tuesday, and we're showing our solidarity, but our board of directors is still 95% white. The royalties are not owned by the Black artists themselves. You know, to type something on your computer is very easy. And, you know, I guess the point that I'm trying to get at is there a danger in, okay, so we've also talked about this, Black History Month, right? What does it look like in our schools, right? What kind of Martin Luther King are they telling you, right? How old did they tell you Rosa Parks was when she sat on the bus, right? What the whitewashing of the movement, Nelson Mandela, right? Yeah. The co-opting of the movement, the commodification of the movement, I think is also quite dangerous, where you have Starbucks, who months ago were in deep waters for not allowing Black men to use the washroom, instead calling the police. Now, there's a report saying that they're not allowing their staff to wear Black Lives Matter paraphernalia, T-shirts. Aren't you the one organization in the history of it was just months ago. So these kind of symbolic gestures, I wonder if they do more damage. It's just a question, if they do more damage than they do positive. Elle, what's your take on this sort of social media blow up that's been happening around the movement?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Mandela, first of all, because I actually have a poem that starts, you know, don't let them take Mandela. No, no, don't let them steal Mandela. Make no mistake, they're going to fake, erase, and lie about Mandela. To make him to die so they could plasticize Mandela, appropriate Mandela. Don't you know they hate Mandela? And it goes from there. But so I'm really glad you brought that up. But, and everyone, like Armani and AK, like, of course, you're right. The first part I'm going to take, I think what I would like young activists to know, that I think is the hardest thing to learn. And I'm like one to speak because I'm someone that is on platforms. But when you're younger, you're like, I want to be on that platform. Like, that's where I want to be. And what we don't show you is the amount of work that goes on before the action. So people don't know. They genuinely don't know. So they think, okay, you go to protest, like you show up and you speak. So to give a concrete example, Abdul Abdi, which was like a national piece of advocacy that we worked on. And that was in the media. Like, we actually got that to the number one story in Canada. But we
can you just give a little bit of background to
he was a Somali refugee that had come to Nova Scotia as a refugee, and the kids were taken into the foster care system and made permanent wards of the state, and they weren't given their citizenship even though they could have been eligible. So the child welfare just didn't give the citizenship, and then when Abdul turned 19, they incarcerated him, and then they tried to deport him to Somalia, and because he hadn't got a citizenship, which was the fault of the state, they could kick him out of the country. So we started organizing on this, me, Desmond Cole, Idil Abdullahi, Robin Maynard. It was across Canada, though. There was just groups and groups across Canada. I mean, Ian, you remember this too, right?
No, you guys did fantastic work. So, and shout outs to everyone that was part of that movement, for sure.
Yeah, and it was like, so we really needed those people. I mean, it was number one trending on Twitter, and that was really important. The people were jumping in, because then CBC's noticing, like, what's this trend? Abdul's sister Fatuma, who herself was facing deportation and had no citizenship, stood up to Justin Trudeau at a town hall and said, would you deport your own son? You know, and that was so powerful. She was 6 months pregnant on a high-risk pregnancy, and she should have been in bed. And that just inspired so many people, including kids in care. But you could see what was in the media, but we were on our phones until 4 a.m. every day during that action, getting up at 6 a.m. We had to get bus pass for, we had to organize his bail. We had to get bus pass. We had to get him a job. We had to make sure Fatuma could eat. Did she have childcare? You know, and that's the work that you don't see. And young people aren't told that. So we think it's very glamorous to do this work. And like, I want to be the person in the front. But actually, the really important thing is who's actually going to the prison to be like, which prison is Abdul? And Adil went to like 6 prisons. We had to find him. Because he didn't know where he was. And she drove across Ontario, like literally going in and jacking up the guards. Like, where is he? You know, and like, nobody knows that work. So that's the work I want young people to understand, that we have, and everyone can do it because it's in our communities, right? Another good example of that kind of work is like, I work in prison abolition. And in those coalitions, there's like people that are political, that are like you guys that are coming in as people that already have a political awareness. But then there's often like people who are white whose like family died in prison. And before that, they may have been pro-cop or pro-prison and all this stuff. And now they've experienced violence and they're working on the prison stuff, but they're also racist. Like, they're from like a small town in Ontario. And we have to work with that person in coalition and like work with them about race. And they might start with like, I don't want to hear about race, you know, and everybody dies by police. My sister died by police. And we have to sometimes work for years with people because we really need to be in coalition and bring them along. And that works so frustrating and it's so hard. And it's not glamorous, right? That will never get you in the media. Like the work of like spelling words for people when they're in prison because they can't write and they need to do a complaint form. And you're sitting there being like, okay, let me spell due process for you, you know, in a 20-minute phone call, and they have to call back 6 times. So I really want young people to understand that growing food in your community is a revolutionary act. You know, healing each other is a revolutionary act. Learning to like deal with conflict in our community is a revolutionary act. Mediating our struggles, like all of those things are actually activist work. And the last of it is going to the media or going up on the platform. But the most of it is that work. And like, I just feel sad sometimes that we haven't educated younger people on this history and we're not teaching them like this is what came before you and this is what our movements looks like and this is who Fanon was and this is who Cabral was. Not because it's smarty smart and it's a university thing. It's actually that our greatest Black minds in history have been devoted to thinking about this. How do we liberate ourselves? And they have left us so many texts, and then white people tell you, you can't read that. That's for your university theory class that only white people are taking on, like, decolonial theory is an act. And you're like, Praxis, you know, and you're like, what the fuck? I'm a Black person. I can't even take that. And in fact, you can read that. You can read Angela Davis. You can read Fanon. You can read Cabral. It's for you. And then you can take it out into your community and say, these are the principles. I made a graphic to teach you this. I made a video to teach you this. I put it in a song to teach you this. Like, that is really, really, really important. So I really want to uphold young people in those capacities, because we all have the capacity to be a revolutionary, and we all have the capacity to be an activist. And yeah, this bullshit of like, I got in the paper because I was wearing the shirt, or I hashtagged the thing. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, it can help build a movement. But if we get distracted and we think that's our goal instead of the liberation of Black people, that we have to really fight and die for every day, we have to sacrifice our lives, we sacrifice our careers, we sacrifice, but it's not a bad thing, because if we sacrifice those things, we will save lives. We will, Abdul was in this country because we sacrificed that time, and it wasn't a sacrifice, it's a joy. And you will never experience anything deeper than if you do liberation work. And you have the power to do it. So I just don't want people to teach you that activism is only for a special few, and you have to have this education, and you have, but we do have to learn. Anyone can do it, but not everything is activism, right? Mm-hmm. Like, anyone can do it, but then we can't pretend that wearing a shirt is activism, like, but don't worry. So don't worry about going out and making sure your community can eat. Right. You know, like, we have to also say it's okay to wear the shirt. If you want to take the selfie and that makes you feel good in this moment, like, that's okay. But what is it accompanied by, and what is behind it, and who are we harming, and who are we helping? That was a really long answer.
But I love it.
This is like literally my 24/7. Like, we need to know this stuff.
No, this is the resources, and this is why we're here. And it's so beautiful and a privilege to have you here, especially during such a, I guess, you know, busy and pivotal time for you and for Black people all around that are trying to do this work and make sense of what is happening. Kizzle.
I got a question. I would love to hear your take on it, because while you were talking about it, in my brain, I was like, oh, I know you're going to have something great to say about this. And Ian, I don't know if this was a question you had lined up or not. What is the role, or can you speak to the role that governmental neglect plays in the current situations that people of color and Black people are facing? I would love to hear you just...
What are you talking about? Can you sort of maybe elaborate on what you mean by government neglect?
So with regards to, and it was kind of mixed with the performative idea, but the fact that government officials are out here, you know, wearing the kente cloth. I know y'all see that.
You see the meme with Nancy Pelosi behind, I think, Monger?
It was the lyrics to Finito, and it was like, I too am a gorilla in the
cool. Oh my God.
Oh,
we're
my
like
God.
Hotep now. Yeah, bro. But that's what I mean, though. Like with regards to them doing all this performative stuff, when it's like, you are literally the people that can go and make changes. And even like beyond that, to like companies too, right? Posting these things when you could just open your wallet and actually help, like stuff like that, you know.
Chad, what do you think? You haven't spoken in a minute. What do you think about that?
When I saw Trudeau kneel, I laughed a little bit, just because I was like, okay, cool. So you're gonna do anything about it? Because like all these government are always, you can say anything. You can say anything, but it's what you do. You know what I mean? Is you can post as much as you want on Instagram. Be like, I support Black Lives Matter, but actually I gotta thank AK for this, because he did send me a link where I could donate. And like, I've learned, especially now, like listening to like every BPR episode since all this has started, I've learned a lot. Like, you can say whatever you want, but what are you doing? You can kneel as much as you want. What are you doing? All right, it's up to us to kneel, because we cannot do anything. We can't, no one, like us, the people, we as the people, we can't make changes in legislation. But if you're kneeling, do something about it. Like, do you believe in what you're kneeling for, or are you kneeling because, oh shoot, there's cameras on me, I gotta do this, you know what I mean?
I mean, Trudeau has increased deportations in this country. We have a target of 10,000 more deportations every year. Those are largely Somali, Nigerians, Haitians, and Black people. So I want to see you kneel. Stop deporting people out of this country. Chrystia Freeland, who was like, we need to recognize racism. I seem to remember her in Halifax running away from Indigenous protesters, literally trying to run and people chasing her with drums. You know, you're literally physically running. Ahmed Hussein, who's Black and Somali, physically ran away. That man is fast. When I tell you, he can run. You know, like
long distance
sprinting from us as we come up an elevator so that like he doesn't have to answer our questions about deportation, you know, like, so we really, you guys, you already know, right? Like these people are in charge. They are in charge of our deportation regime. Trudeau appointed Bill Blair public safety minister. He was the police chief in Toronto. He was carding Black people. He oversaw the violation of civil rights in G20. Officers covered their badges. He did not punish them. They lost a day pay. And he got promoted. So what does that tell you about how Trudeau cares about Black lives? He does not care about Black lives. Chrystia Freeland does not care. Bill Blair does not care. He's letting people die in prison from COVID right now. So we have to stay sharp, you know? It's our job to educate ourselves and then throw all the charm when people are like, but Trudeau knelt. We have to have the courage to say, nah. Like, because there's people around you that are like, can't you just enjoy it? Can't you just be happy? What's wrong with you? You always complain. Like, you wanted people to talk about racism, and now they're talking about racism, and, like, you're still mad. And you said you didn't want the city tank, and now they got rid of the tank. You're still mad. I'm like, yeah, I'm mad because you're giving it to public safety, and isn't that just policing? Until I see that money in my community, I'm going to be mad. If it's not feeding Black people and putting food on their table and helping them take the bus, it is not liberation. It's just a government bureaucratic elite redistribution program. And that's also talk about the counter-revolutionary elements in our own communities, right? Because we talk about white people, and yes, white supremacy is the problem, and it's the root of the problem. But unfortunately, our own people go underneath us and on top of us. And when we're asking for something and saying we don't want people to be deported, they're making deals, right? So we also have to hold our own communities to account and think about respectability politics and how powerful that is, especially towards young people, where like elders are always like, well, again, why are they dancing in the streets? You know, so we really have to uphold young people and revolutionary young people and those expressions. And we really have to fight this class-based, you ain't if you don't have a degree, or you can't speak the right way, or you have this and that. And obviously skin shade, and I say this as a light-skinned person, you know, like all of that, that tells us that some people are more worthy than others and upholds those people, that we have to like really think about that in our own communities, because you're not doing this the right way. Why are you being so angry and loud? I support BLM, but I don't like their tactics, you know? Like, all of that is counter-revolutionary. It's my favorite word right now. But these people are agents. They are cops in
agents,
our communities.
Agents, vampires. You know? Welcome back. If you've tuned in, you know what it is. The revolution will not be televised. It will be on the radio. And this is Speak On It. We apologize for to our listeners if you can't handle the truth. Amani, AK, did you have any couple questions before I get to the questions in the chat?
Okay, I got one question, and this is to like everyone. So I feel like I remember hearing at this conference I went to in March about white supremacy. Someone asked, so what is the first step we can take to fixing the issue, like any issue? And so the speaker said, we've been on the first step for like generations and generations and generations. And that like really, really hit me. So I'm just like, so what do you guys think are the next steps? So what do you guys want to exactly see in the next like year or so happen?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, I want people to keep that same energy. Keep that same energy. 2 months from now, I want you to be the most nice to every Black person that you see. But you know, I have my reservations about that. But if you can keep that same energy, I think we're going in a good direction.
AK, what do you want to see?
Ooh, as far as next steps, I don't know if it's because I'm about to graduate from McMaster next year. It's my last year. Mm-hmm. I want to see Blackness in academia addressed and supported and treated with the care that it needs to be treated with. I feel like there's always a lot of talk of the youth of the future and the youth of the future and da-da-da-da. And it's like it's easy to say that until you actually have to support the youth, right? And it's not enough to just get people to university or get people to college and then be like, all right, you're on your own, figure it out, right? There's a lot of being a black student in a business program, in an econ program, there's a lot of navigating around, you know, there's microaggressions all over the place. There's white supremacy aspects in the curriculum, these type of things that are taught to us, moments in history are talked about, statistics as opposed to being like the actual historical context of it talked about, right? So stuff like that, I feel like, is the next step. Like, we're already working on getting young people to positions where, you know, we can become lawyers and doctors and engineers and business people and this, that, and the third, but if we can't just let us get to university or get to whatever level and then be like, all right, figure it out, you're on your own. So that's the next step for me, would be like in academia.
Chad?
For me, the next, I think I'm really on Ian's side where, like, in 2 months, still have that same level of activism, right? I think it was you that said it, hit it on the head. What were you doing before this, right? What were you doing before this? Keep doing what you're doing now, right? So personally, I just recently started to donate, and now that I know that I have the links, I have the resources, like, I'm going to, like, I've set it up in my mind, even in my schedule, like, every, like, 2 months, every 3 months, I'm going to do a donation to a different organization. And
Chad, you can give to my African Poets Fund. I need a new jacket.
Hey, listen,
Chad, he's from Ghana. Don't give it to him. He's gonna use
I like that movement. Everyone get their SERP check and donate it.
Yes.
Just a portion. Just donate $100. Like,
this is a program. Everybody take your SERP check and don't. Yes.
Max.
Amani, you didn't answer your own question.
Oh, yes, true.
Yes. So personally, I'd agree with Ian. Keep that same energy you had 2 months ago, 3 months ago. Keep that same energy. Like, I remember I was, like, posting on my Instagram story laughing about Trudeau's apology or recognition of racism in Canada. I'm just like, oh my gosh, we have racism in Canada. I have to move back home. We gotta go. Soyera. Because honestly, stop talking and start acting.
Facts. Because
literally, we've been talking for years about the same things. Just because you suddenly notice the elephant in the room doesn't mean it stopped pooping. Doesn't mean you don't smell it. So you gotta actually clean.
People said about keeping energy. I really think young people need to identify the revolutionary elders in your own communities and really go seek them out and talk to them. Like, I think there's a lot of intergenerational stuff that happens with Black people, where especially, you know, and there's elders that are very respectability politics and very much gatekeeping young people and blocking young people. But I think there's also young people that are operating without knowing their history. And I think we can come together, and particularly, like, you don't have to like every elder in your community, but there's revolutionary elders in your community that, like, were doing this stuff before any of us were alive. And I think it's really, really important to get back to them and be like, what worked and didn't, because they've seen all these strategies, they've gone through it and had themselves, you know, they've already experienced the state push them down and how movements get stopped and how energy gets lost. So I also really challenge young people to go and find those histories, because the state wants us to have amnesia, right? Like, they want us to believe that Martin Luther King just marched by himself and he was just a charismatic figure. And they want us to believe that because we're like, until Martin Luther King the next comes along, we can't do this. And we don't, that's not how the civil rights movement happened. Martin Luther King learned everything from women organizers. It was like Fannie Lou Hamer and Ella Baker and, like, all these women that were around him that actually taught him, that were organizers before he was organizers. They were the master organizers. They were writing the songs and everything. And until we know that, we don't know that when the Montgomery bus boycotts, how do you think people found out to boycott? So Rosa Parks happens on, like, Friday, and they want to start the bus boycotts on Monday. How do you think the Black community found out about it? Church on Sunday. So what happened? They actually stayed up all night. There was a Black woman who worked in, like, the office at the university, and she and a bunch of students stayed up for 24 hours and printed flyers on, like, a mimeograph, which you had to, like, crank by hand. you know, and printed thousands and thousands and thousands of flyers so they could distribute them at church so everyone knew, don't take the bus on Monday. That's organizing, right? But if right. you don't know that, then you think Rosa Parks just sat because she was tired, you know, this lie they tell you through school. So I think I really want to challenge young people on your own, like, to go out and talk to your elders and, like, orient yourself in that history. And, like, we really need to break down some of these generational barriers that I think cause a lot of toxicity in our community around, like, just people that aren't working together and understanding each other. So that's, but I agree, like, keep the energy, keep the revolutionary energy, you know, find your people. There's a lot of people that, you know, you need to get rid of toxic people. Don't mm-hmm. be afraid. Get rid of all those people from high school that are your friends from high school, your white friends mm-hmm. from high school. Like, but we lived in res together in first grade. Like, get rid of them now. It's not worth it. Kick
As
them out.
We go you know? On. Like, we give thanks. I want to get real quick to these questions on the chat. We're just going to do rapid fire. There's actually only one major one here from T. T asks tips for dealing with harm reduction in regards to dealing with conflict in conversations around racism. So, you know, we've all been in these situations, perhaps more than we'd like to, more recently than others, where, you know, you're having conversations with people about racism. Most likely it's a non-Black person, and either they're offended or they're offending you. You know, how do we go about continuing on the discourse in a way that's progressive and non-harmful to those engaging in it?
Well, first of all, you have to ask, do I need this person or not? So if it's not somebody you need, you should really consider, like I just said, like, am I wasting energy on this person in this life who's bringing me down? Like, let them go, and maybe they'll learn something and come back later. Mm. And if not, I really don't think that people should be frittering away their energy. Like, when people are like, I'm really, really tired, I'm so exhausted, I'm like, but how are we spending our energies? If we're spending our energy all day arguing with fools on social media that ain't even into it, then we don't have energy at the end of the day to do the things we need. So if you don't need that person, think really carefully about why you're engaging with them. If it's someone you need, like someone in your workplace, and it's your boss and you can, or your family member, and like a lot of us, especially those of us who are like mixed race, we have white people in our families that we have to like deal with directly, right. You know? So that's a tougher question because those are people we actually need. So I'm like, divest and, you know, defund your friendships. Like, first of all,
defund your friendship you know? And the police.
But beyond that, I think harm reduction for yourself is understanding that it's not something you're doing wrong. When I was younger, you know, I would walk away from these conversations and I would feel like it was me. Like, I just maybe didn't explain enough. I got too angry. Maybe if I'd had more sources, maybe if I hadn't talked as much, maybe if I talked more, you know, and I would take that on myself. And I had to realize it's not my burden to shift. It's their burden to shift. So I don't have to feel guilty if this person I work with isn't convinced by me. They're not convinced by me because they hate Black people, like, not because of my argument. So I think it's really important to understand that and not let yourself be gaslit around, like, you're crazy. And that's ableist, right? People say that to you, you're crazy, or you're militant, or you hate white people, or, right. You know, like, all this shaming. So you have to hold firm in that. So I think that's harm reduction for you. I think in the conversation with other people, I mean, it depends. Like, I don't know, it's so complex because it's like, you know, for me, I can't really go super wild in my public communications because then 50 million people are emailing my university asking to be fired.
Right.
But if you don't care, then go ham, you know? But sometimes, I mean, I think making your argument, knowing your argument, which means doing your research, coming from a place where you know what you're talking about, and then just laying it out. And sometimes it's set it and forget it, man. Like, when I do an article or something, I don't check the comments. I know that when I say the police chief is racist, there's going to be 500 angry comments by white people, like, threatening to kill me. Who cares? Like, so don't take that on, is what I'm saying. Like, in general, if you want to engage, engage. Know what you're talking about. Drop your knowledge. Walk away.
Bless.
And that's it.
L. Jones, poet, activist, teacher, radio host. We thank you so much for having us, or for joining us on the program. We thank Poetic License and the Hamilton Youth Poets. If you want to check more about L. Jones, she has a number of great poems online, wonderful articles. Make sure you check in with yourself, with the movement. Be genuine, be honest, keep it real, and you know, feel free to speak on it, because that's what we do out here on Speak On It every week on the Hawk 101.5. Much love.
Thank you, Ian, and thank you so much to the youth. Like, y'all are fire. You're on point. Your analysis, your critique, your speaking. Like, keep it coming, man. You know, just keep it coming. Be confident in yourselves. Keep it coming. And thank you, Ian, for hosting all of this, too.
Look, black is beautiful, black is excellent. Black is pain, black is joy, black is evident. It's working twice as hard as the people you know you're better than, cause you need to do double what they do so you can level them. Black is so much deeper than just African American. Our heritage been severed, you never got to experiment with family trees, cause they teach you about famine and greed and show you pictures of our fam on their knees. Tell us we used to be barbaric, we had actual queens. Black is watching child soldiers getting killed by other children, feeling sick like, oh shoot, this could have happened to me. Your mummy watching, telling stories about your dad and your niece. The black of the berry, the sweet of the juice. The kid dies, the black of the killer, the sweet of the news. And if he's white, you give him a chance, he's ill and confused. If he's black, he's probably armed, you see him and shoot. Look, black is growing up around the barbershop. Mummy saying stay away from trouble, you're in yard a lot. Studying for ages, appreciating the chance you got, cause black is in your blood and you ain't even got the heart to stop. Black is stepping in for your mother because your father's gone, and standing by your children when you haven't proven karma wrong. Black is doing all of the above, then going corner shopping, trying to help a lady cross the road to have her walking off. Black is growing up around your family and making it, then being forced to leave the place you love because there's hate in it. People say you fake this, you never stayed to change the shoot. But black is being jealous, you'd be dead if you had stayed in it. Black is struggling to find your history or the initiative. You don't know the truth about your race cause they're erasing it. Black has got a sour hit off the flavor, here's a taste of it. But black is all I know, there ain't a thing that I would change in it. Look, black ain't just a single off in color, man, it shades to it. Her hair straight and thick, but mine's got waves in it. Black is not divisive, they've been lying and I hate this shit. Black has never been a competition, we all make this shit. Black is deadly. Black is when you're freezing in your home and you can't get sleep, but never feeling empty, cause you got 20 cousins in your country living stress-free, walking for their water daughter wrapped inside a bed sheet. Black is distant, it's representing countries that never even existed while your grandmother was living. Black is my Ghanaian brother reading into scriptures, doing research on his lineage, finding out that he's Egyptian. Black is people naming your countries on what they trade most. Coast of Ivory, Gold Coast, and the Grain Coast, but most importantly, to show how deep all of this pain goes. West Africa, Benin, they call the Slave Coast. Black is so confusing because the culture, they're in love with it. They take our features when they want and have their fun with it. Never seem to help with all the things we know would come with it. Loud in our laughter, silent in our suffering. Black is being strong inside the face of defeat. Poverty made me a beast, I battled the law in the streets. We all struggle, but your struggle ain't a struggle like me. Or how could it be when your people gave us the odds that we beat? I mean, what about our brothers that are stuck in jail that could have busted bail? They held a burden, got to live with it. Black is being guilty until proven that you're innocent. Black is saying free months in the fuck inside in prison cells. They think it's funny, we ain't got nothing to say to them. Unconditional love is strange to them, it's amazing. And black is like the sweetest opposite flavor, here's a taste of it. But black is all I know, there ain't a thing that I would change in it.